This is the Box Gathering Podcast. We take a deeper look into how learning affects boxing development and how our understanding of this as coaches can make a greater impact on performance. Catch up with us at www.theboxgathering.co.uk. The Box Gathering. Connect, share, grow.
Happy New Year, everyone. Yeah, this is Adam Hanover from the Box Gathering Podcast and the Box Gathering, of course. Yeah, Happy New Year to you, everyone. I'm just driving home now from my first week back at the Dice Boxing Academy at Greater Brighton Metropolitan College. had some really kind of good news, actually, when we got back. We've been told that we can kind of expand and move into a much bigger space within the college. So we're moving our gym to a huge area where we'll be able to squeeze in loads and loads of boxing rings, free weights, bag area, and more importantly, just a big old open space area where we can do lots of technical work, etc. So really excited there, and we're getting so many boxers come to the course, but the facility's been a little bit too small in the past, so they've recognised that and investing, so that's a great thing. Anyway, enough about work. So just want to kind of talk along the lines more about this, I don't know, shall we call it a series? I'm talking about conditioned spars, so an area that I'm really, really interested in at the moment, about what kind of constraints or conditions that we're putting into spars to help bring out and elicit new skills, to help skills emerge, rather than just a kind of information processing approach, which is can often be very linear and do this, do that, and hoping that the boxers can perform. Sometimes they can, but in my experience, a lot of the times they're not able to imitate if you haven't got the right conditions in place. So I've been thinking very much about a certain spar today. So let's give you the rundown first, what we've been doing. So I've been really trying to think about how you shift their attentional focus, where their attention is, and how using point scoring systems can do that. So by point scoring systems, I don't mean just like in about, you know, you score one, they score one, and it's almost like computer or clickers or something like that. I don't mean that. But manipulating the scoring criteria to slide their attention where it needs to be. Now, to keep it very kind of standardized at the start, the score was try and get to five, right? So you had to try and get to five. And I constrained certain punches. So a jab to the upper target was one. Okay, so 1 point. Score that. If you score five jabs, you win that game and you're 1 point up. Okay, a little bit like tennis, I suppose. But we also threw in one certain shot. So the first one we threw in was a lead hook to the body. If you scored that, that was 5 points. So that instantly meant that you won the game. So a couple of things started emerging from this, and it was interesting because between rounds I was asking the boxers about their feedback, you know, what their thought process is on what they were doing, where their mindset was, why were they choosing certain strategies. And I found it really, really interesting. So a lot of them were using the jab to hide the shot. So their feedback was it was very much about setting shots up. So rather than just trying to pile in and throw lots of hooks to the body, it was about using that jab to set shots up, and changing the pace of that jab, the speed of the jab, tempo. But the interesting thing is what they found by doing that, by changing the tempo of the jab, they're actually managing to score quite a lot with the jab. So they were getting maybe 2 or 3 points up, which is nearly to the point of five where you win. And then once that jab becomes more of a distraction and more of a, call it a range finder, then it actually became a lot easier to throw that lead hook into the body. So a kind of thing start happening. You can either double down and go lead hook crazy, and you might get lucky and score a big shot and you win the game. So I suppose in a boxing scenario, you know, you've caught someone with the lead hook to the body, you've taken the wind out of their sails, you slow them down, you might even put them down and give them a standing eight, etc. So that could happen. But also, the kind of feedback I got as well is that it highlighted the value of the jab as a set up punch, but also as a scoring punch. Now, sometimes we don't often massively consider it as a big scoring punch because it's not a power shot, it's a speed shot, it's a setup shot, it's a distractor, whatever it might be. There's a million different things why we use the jab. But some of the boxers were winning because of the jab, you know, and that's five consecutive shots. Now, the downside you could see from it is, well, maybe that if you're saying that 5 points is to the lead up to the body, then it kind of devalues the jab a little bit. But I almost found it went the other way. It kind of valued it more because although it was only worth one shot, it helped you get that shot in. So a lot of times the boxers were winning, you know, maybe 5-3 or something like that after a while. But the hook to the body, occasionally people were scoring that and able to hide it rather than load up for it. So it kind of brought that in as well. So when you do get a boxer who is, you know, often loads up with shots, big overhand rights, big lead hooks, leaping in, you know, throwing uppercuts from their knees, that kind of thing. They realized that they weren't going to get any success, so they weren't going to get those 5 points and get that shutout straight away. So I think there were some pros and cons to it on that side, but lots of different things started emerging when I started asking the questions of what do you see? What did you see happening? You know, asking these kind of open-ended questions. And I found it really, really, really interesting. Okay, so then next step. Start looking at the different shots. So the different 5 point shot we chose was the rear hand uppercut to the head. So a bit of a flash shot. You know, if it scores cleanly, it's a really noticeable one for the judges to score. It's a real confident shot. But because a lot of jabs were coming at people, to score it, there had to be that head movement. You know, like for example, a little dip or an outside slip. And these skills start emerging as a result of the fact that people are getting quite are trying to score with a jab quite often. So counter punching came into it really, really well. But also people were setting up their rear hand uppercut with the jab as well. So in terms of the offense, they started linking that kind of context together of how the jab can kind of open up that guard, keep the other person's attention fragmented, so they're not being able to react to that uppercut, even though they know that that's the shot the other person's looking for. So I found that really interesting as well. And of course, the next progression is, okay, you know, now just to make it a little bit more like a bout or like a more of an open spar, just progressing it up that complexity, scoring bout for five was the rear end uppercut or the lead hook to the body. So they're looking for those, either of those shots. So of course, the defending boxer has a lot more now to think about what's coming back at them, but they've also got a lot more opportunities or affordances to score those shots as well. So it just brings a bit more complexity. So reasons for that, I've been doing a lot of reading and listening up on podcasts, etc., etc., about something called representative practice design. So I know that's a bit of a flashy free word of there, representative practice design, but essentially it's about specificity. So does the session that I've designed, does it have a level or degree of similarity to what's actually going to happen to the sport? Because the bottom line is, if there's low similarity to the demands and the kind of variability, in other words, all that information and noise that's going on in the spa, and when I say noise, I mean information, I don't mean sound. If it's very, very low level, then it's very likely there to be less transfer of skill. So that's one factor that we need to have. You need to kind of often have a similar amount of representativeness. And now, before people pick me apart on that one, not all the time, because sometimes you really need to kind of almost dumb things down if you wanted to slide a bit of attention to where it might need to be, especially if you're looking down at maybe an internal focus of control, which is about components of a technique, for example, something you haven't got quite got down. You haven't got those kind of non-negotiables of rotation or drive or whatever it might be, or recoil of, you know, when you're punching, whatever it might be. So sometimes you do slide it down and you can do shadow boxing, bag work, which is very unrepresentative and has low levels of skill transfer, but still has its place in that kind of place where to start learning you need attention on the area that needs to be focused on. If you're not attending to that area and not concentrated and focused on that area, then you're very unlikely to get skill transfer. So you need that kind of level of focus as well to get good level of skill transfer. But my focus was really on that kind of practice design. So I was very aware that if the other boxer knows that the other person's looking for the uppercut, they're looking for the hook, because you've talked about it before, then that actually drops that level of representativeness, because, you know, you're always going to be ready to defend that shot. So you could argue, yeah, but it does make the other person actually become a little bit more adaptable and a little bit more imaginative in how they try and land the shot, because the other person's got their shots in place and defenses in place. So things like feinting, triggering, drawing all starts coming out of the bag very sort of implicitly, which is great. But in terms of this whole representativeness, I think, okay, so we need to kind of make it a little bit more dynamic so they can then start choosing. So what is the shot? So it might be that the shot, they do it now covert. So they don't tell the other person, and the shot is for boxer A, might be different from boxer B, but they tell the coach, the other boxer doesn't know. So it becomes a lot more real, a little bit more representative, and the person has to really start tuning in. So I think in terms of transfer, what's starting to happen now is you're really starting to train that perceptual system. So you're starting to look for clues in that spar, information, clues and cues that what is that other boxer trying to do? Have they thrown a certain pattern a few times, which makes me think they're looking for this shot? Okay, so it could be something along those lines. Now, the thing about if it is very covert and you're not quite sure, that's brilliant. Because, well, like I said, you're trying to train that perceptual system. You're actually trying to read what's going on. And we all know that half of boxing is reading and half of boxing is action, right? Perception action. You've got to read, you've got to act, you've got to act, you've got to read. Half and half. So I think by doing this, it draws their attention to having to read the information from the other boxer. So they become a lot more attuned in terms of what they're looking for, how they then defend that, and how they counter that. So it becomes a lot more real, and that can change on as well. So you can move that on to, okay, so it's two shots now that you're allowed. Again, tell the coach, so the coach knows, so they're not cheating, just for their own sort of so they feel like they can throw any shot and they'll win. They've got to commit to it, and then the other boxer needs to react to it. So I don't really want to wait to the end of the round where I say, okay, then what was the other boxer trying to do? Oh, he's trying to throw this and this. We'd still ask those questions, but really what I want for adaptability, I want the boxer to be able to read it during the round and see, can they show what they're doing during the round? So if those behaviours aren't coming out and they're not able to work out what's going on, now the reason for that might be because if you're doing only first to five, five as in that one shot stops the game, then how do you see them adapt to it? Because the game's over. So what you then start doing, or what I started doing, is going, okay, you can get to 10. So a jab is still worth one, but you could still win this by two of those chosen shots. So it still gives the other opposing boxer the opportunity now to realise that they're looking for this shot. So they still get a second bite of the cherry, as it were. But we don't want to give them so many bites of the cherry, because if you give them so many bites of the cherry, then it could be that, well, they're getting hit with four or five quite big scoring shots. And obviously it's not something that we want to do. So we want to put them under a little bit of pressure, depending on what shot the other person's looking for. So again, you've got that kind of level of representativeness. But it also brings up the something called challenge point theory. So it depends. You know, I know it depends is a cop-out, but let's be honest, life is grey. Sport is grey, boxing is grey area. So it often does depend. And you've got different levels of ability, weight, etc., experience. So challenge point theory basically talks about, are you challenging and are you supporting or stretching and supporting the person in front of you? So it could be, okay, so you're looking for just this one shot because defensively the other person is maybe not as experienced as you or switched on as you, so they're only looking for one shot. But the more experienced might be there's two or three shots. You're looking for two or three shots because your partner is quite experienced and I really want to stretch their perceptual system, their ability to defend. So you kind of start stretching them that way and then monitoring it. And it might be like, okay, well, let's drop you down to two because you're getting not much success. Let's push you up to three because you're getting a lot of success. And it could be different for each individual or each pair. So just kind of that stretch and support challenge point theory being sort of thrown in there. But really enjoyed the spar today with the dice boxers. Some great feedback in terms of what they were thinking. And as usual, there's always a few elements that come out that I didn't think would emerge, which is great because it's that kind of real, they call it sort of divergent, when people are starting to actually find things themselves and go off and try new things, and just giving them that autonomy to actually try different shots. Anyway, final one before I sign off for today, guys, is rather than calling the shot, one of the changes that we did is say, okay, well, we're going to call the target area. So rather than saying lead hook to the body, so if you're an orthodox, you're throwing that left hook to the body, I'm still calling that same target area, but you can land a shot how you want. So it could be that they pivot off to the left and throw a jab to the body, or they pivot off and they throw a right uppercut to the body. So then we have that more area of exploration, you have more area of adaptability. So it's not just this whole idea of my technique has to be perfect to land, but what is technique? Technique is actually, good technique is if it scores. Just because you think you might have perfect technique and it doesn't score, well, that's not skillful. So that's a different thing. But because you change it to a target area rather than the shot you must throw, then the boxers start thinking about how they move the trunk, how they move the feet, how they time the shot, and how they manipulate time and space between the boxers. So all these sort of things start coming out and emerging. And again, yeah, very difficult in terms of challenge point theory. Some people get it, some people don't. So I think the skill of the coach is how you maneuver that up and down. And that's a real hard challenge for me in the future weeks coming up with this type of thing. But Another thing on top of that, really engaged. Boxers really, really engaged, really, really focused, defensively really, really savvy. The more you opened it up as well, they still remain savvy with the more shots that came in. So you could really tell their perceptual system was really switched on, the ability to read those clues and cues. There we go. Really enjoyed the session today. Anyway, thanks for listening to my, I don't want to call them a rant, it's just us talking shop. Everyone likes talking shop. Cheers, guys. Thanks to all the members as well of the Box Gathering. Such a massive high level people have renewed this year as well. We've got some really exciting stuff coming out, including different types of podcasts as well. We're looking at interviewing other people on the podcast, our members, and we're also looking at short tech and tack clips. I mean, I know the internet is completely awash with here's how you throw a jab, here's how you throw a backhand on a bag, blah, 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 and very technique based. But we're going to look at certain things about adaptability. You know, what is technique? What is, you know, how do you actually create a scenario or an exchange or a drill, although I don't like the word drill, but how you actually create something to start thinking about adapting the shot so it becomes more skillful rather than just a technique that doesn't often always work. So yeah, we're looking at some of those things because there's been a lot of requests from our membership. So that will be to our gold members only. So if you do want to become a member, then go to www.theboxgathering.co.uk and then sign up as a gold member, guys. Obviously, there is a silver membership, which is free, but just has a few little samples in there just to whet your appetite. Anyway, drop me a line. What do you think about today? What do you think about the different types of spars? What do you do? How do you do covert sparring where the boxers aren't aware of what the other person's trying to do? What kind of skills emerge, etc., etc. Right, have a great week. All the best, guys. Cheers. Ta-ra.
If you liked this podcast, similar content and discussions can be found at The Box Gathering. The Box Gathering is a social initiative born out of the ashes of the first lockdown in March 2020. We provide a platform where coaches, boxers, officials and boxing enthusiasts can join together online to discuss various boxing topics. It's free to join, and upgrade options offer unlimited access to all our live gatherings, campfire videos, and coaching resources. Join today at www.theboxgathering.co.uk.